soon as. To leave? Yeah, okay. All right, next one would be, I guess, McCune, right? Rockde, no? There's three more we're going to do that were here. No, it's McCombs, right? And Payne, okay. Ms. McPherson, right? We are going to do Lori McCombs?
Yes, it's correct.
Okay. That's number 1026. Mr. Sato?
Can I go ahead and get a connection
Actually,
here?
We'll go first. Matt will make a presentation.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Here is a map of the Prohibition Zone. The Lori McComb is a designated party that has submitted replies to emails and who we have been corresponding with, and we have plenty of evidence that she's been receiving our documents. She's represented by... She's represented by Ms. McPherson. I think that demonstrate
is that
she's
the right house, Ms. McPherson?
It doesn't appear to be the right house. I believe she's more up by the...
the address?
Okay.
Yeah.
The address correct?
1327 16th Street.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
1327...
Okay. I will stipulate that this... There seem to be a lot of people that believe that this is labeled wrong. That's a possibility.
1026.
Her address is 1327 16th Street. These are the numbered streets. So 16th Street, this is, I think, first. Or this is first, I'm not sure. Yeah, this is first right here. And second, and it's numbered to 16. All of these numbered streets are within the Prohibition Zone boundaries. So we contend that McComb's property is located within the Prohibition Zone boundary. But I think that Ms. McPherson might even stipulate to that as well.
Where is 16th Street?
No, I wouldn't. I would want to know which of these dots represents her house. If you've been there and...
Well, I guess a cross-examination, they'll have to take, you'll take that up with him. So...
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. As I said, I'm contending that the McComb's property is located within the Prohibition Zone. Ms. McComb has not submitted any evidence to suggest that she does not have a septic system discharge. That's all for now.
Okay. And I don't see that we have any written submissions from her. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Is that the prosecution team's case?
16th Street.
Mr. Sato?
I believe that is our case.
I will just add that 16th Street on the map is the third street from the right on the east side, and it's totally within the Prohibition Zone. We have signed
street, right?
Certified mail cards that she has signed saying that she received mail at that address.
Okay.
I don't think there's any disagreement there.
Right. I just want to point out, I probably made a mistake, but it's probably one of these properties along here.
No, that's...
Okay, would somebody like to point out where 16th Street
no.
is?
No.
Okay.
No.
If you don't...
No. Well, we don't want to help them do their job.
Okay. all right.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Ms. McPherson, cross-examination?
Yes, thank you. Gail McPherson for Lori McCombs. I wanted to ask if the cease and desist orders are for nitrogen loading on the basin.
They are not.
Can you tell me what they're for?
Cease and desist orders, I think, speak for themselves. They, if ordered by the board, require individuals to hook to a community sewer system when that's available.
Are you aware that Ms. McCombs only had 1 week to examine, or less than 1 week to examine, the latest version of the modified CDO and settlement agreement, and never had an opportunity to meet or have a question-answer period with staff members from the Water Board to explain what they meant, what the language, the regulatory language meant?
I guess we don't know when she received the document. I don't know that it's true that she didn't have the opportunity to talk with anybody at least on the prosecution team about what something may or may not have meant, because I think we indicated in our communications that we'd be willing to talk to anyone about the settlement proposal.
And when did that communication, when was that mailed out?
We've had a lot of written communication, Gail. Can you tell me which dated document you're referring to?
I'm referring to a document that was, I believe, dated the 1st of December, and it did not have the modified CDO or the settlement offer attached to it. It just referenced a lot of people that had not been working with an attorney. I think it included a lot of people who were not, but I believe that's the document I'm talking about.
Are you referring to the prosecution team's legal and technical scientific rebuttals to the designated parties' responses to the proposed cease and desist orders?
No, that actually was only received by Ms. McCombs last Wednesday, two days ago. This one I'm talking about is the offer for a settlement or to review the modified CDO, which we're discussing the modified CDO today, not one of the ones that she reviewed in April or September or January.
I need a better identification of the document before we can give any specifics about it.
It's the December 1st notice of settlement.
Gail,
it's your document.
Gail, the document is a notice of the revised settlement option. It's dated December 6th.
Oh, sorry.
And it was sent out Thursday, December 7th.
Okay. So that would give about 1 week for her to receive that and examine it, and then locate a copy of both the modified CDO and the settlement offer.
Well, we need to clarify something. Was McComb one of those represented by Shauna Sullivan?
No, I don't believe she was at that time.
Okay. So, yeah, she was sent it on Thursday, December 7th. And okay. So, yeah, your question, does she have about a week to review it?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's correct.
Did you have an offer of staff or an ombudsman to work with any of these people who may have responded or not responded based on confusion over the technical language and the of your notices?
In the letter, we asked that if anybody had any questions, they could contact us any time. I think the fact that, you know, about 25 parties have settled suggests that some people understood it.
I would not characterize that agreeing to something as understanding it. I think I'd like to just state for the record that I don't think that that's a conclusion. That's your opinion, and the IRS, nobody understands that, and people file documents and sign them all the time. What was the issue? I'm sorry. I'm not. I apologize for that. I took exception to his remark. When was the issues of pollution in the basin plan and the prohibition zone up for discussion, if today is not the day?
What do you mean by up for discussion?
It's been said over and over that the time to challenge, to discuss, to question, to review the basin plan, prohibition zone, and different pollutants that have led us to this day are not up for discussion. And I wanted to know when was the time that this should have happened, and at what opportunity could these people have brought these issues and question them. It is the foundation for the cease and desist orders.
The board adopted the resolution in 1983, not without public drafts, public hearings, and everything attendant with them. So that was the time.
Are you aware of the change in the law that that stated that your challenge would be only if you had enforcement actions pending, and then later it changed to a time frame that surrounded the adoption of the basin plan amendment?
Let me just say, Ms. McPherson, we have addressed this issue in our rebuttal statement dated December 1st, 2006.
No, Ms. McCombs didn't have time to read that. She just received that this week. The basin plan specifies certain constituents that led to the prohibition. Can you tell me what those constituents that led to the prohibition are?
Yeah, I'm looking at the findings in resolution number 8313, and they mention nitrogen, bacteria, as total and fecal coliform levels. That's about it in this quick read.
So it's pathogens and nitrogen?
Let me just say that, I think Mr. Thompson is not speaking from any direct knowledge about how this basin plan was developed. He's simply reading from the document itself. The document speaks for itself. I'm not certain what this line of questioning is going to lead to with regard to the issues that are supposed to be before the board today.
I would agree with you.
So what actions are you taking to control nitrogen in other areas of your responsibility? Are you issuing cease and desist orders in other areas for nitrogen? And this goes to consistency.
We do have an agricultural regulation program which addresses nitrate issues, and an on-point source program.
Are you issuing, I asked if you were issuing any CDOs on other areas for nitrogen?
I'm not aware of any.
No individuals? No individual property owners anywhere else?
Not that I'm aware of.
8313 and the 1988 prohibition was based on the highest density areas of Los Osos in 1983. Are you aware of how many homes were added between 1983 and 1988?
Approximately 800.
Let me do this. Normally, I don't want to start limiting testimony, but it's not going to matter what their answer is to that, one way or the other, because it doesn't go to prove or disprove any of the issues in front of us. So I do want to be able to get Mr. Payne in and Mr. Rockney in before we conclude tonight. And we have a few other issues that we want to tie together. And
they have given me many of the things that they're interested in cross-examining, and their cross-examination would probably be a lot less, because of this. But I wouldn't want to limit Ms. McComb's opportunity to ask questions and find out the basis for this.
I know, but, Ms. McPherson,
we're tired.
As I sit here, and I have certain things to decide in front of me, I'm listening carefully to what everybody says, and I'm weighing it. Does it prove or disprove anything? It's in contention. And so I'm just telling you that this line of questioning isn't helping, in my opinion, my board. So I would appreciate if your questions were more focused on what really is at issue here. I mean, the basin plan is the basin plan. It was adopted 8313. It's back in the 80s. They testified that the time period for challenging it has passed. What efforts they have made since then to regulate nitrogen in Los Osos, right now I don't know, and I don't know that their answer doesn't have any bearing on what we're forced to consider today. That doesn't mean that those aren't important issues, but not everything that is important to what's happening in Los Osos is in front of us, just very selected items.
This just goes to her defense. Did you conduct an economic analysis of the impact of these enforcement efforts prior to proposing them on the individuals or the community?
We have some understanding of the costs of compliance.
And did you do any kind of economic analysis?
Can you clarify what you mean by economic analysis?
Well, in the enforcement guidelines, they suggest that you do an economic analysis for the impacts on the individual as well as the community. And then there's also an important kind of rule of thumb that you don't provide an economic benefit to somebody who's polluting. Is there a document that we could refer to for that economic analysis?
No.
And also, I'm just going to interpose an objection that I'm not sure that the part of the policy that you seem to be referring to applies in this particular situation. Because it sounds like what you're doing is talking about the policy that applies to the issuance of administrative complaint liability, which is a different kind of analysis and a different type of procedure.
What is the consequence of the 2008 date in the modified cease and desist order?
I think the document speaks for itself.
What is the consequence of the failure of the Blakeslee plan? Because what we've been hearing is that as long as the Blakeslee plan goes forward, there's no problem with that 2011 date. What I'm asking is, what is the consequence if it doesn't go forward, if it fails? Is the consequence an ACL?
Well, I don't know. I think the consequence of the proposed cease and desist order is that there should be a cessation of discharges. That is that is the requirement. And the law provides for, if somebody fails to comply with the cease and desist order, certain penalties and certain remedies available to the water board. But I certainly can't say what those would be, because we don't know whether anybody is going to violate a cease and desist order.
But don't you think it might be important for the board to know what those penalties might be while they impose these upon people? You don't know what exactly they might be, but in stating that there is a possible failure of the Blakeslee plan, then they would know going in that this is not an innocuous document, or the CDO is not without teeth. Is that true?
Presumably the CDO does have teeth, and I'm assuming that the board has been well advised as to what teeth the CDO has.
And I'm concerned whether or not the public has been advised of such. Have you advised the public of the teeth that are there if there's a failure? Because I've heard a lot of information and read the documents, and mostly it says that it isn't a problem as long as the Blakeslee plan goes through, but it doesn't give the flip side. Did you give the flip side?
The statute provides for the enforcement options available for the failure to comply with a cease and desist order. I don't know what else you're talking about in terms of talking about the benefits of this, of the Blakeslee legislation. Let me tell you that if you're referring to any communications that we had that were settlement communications...
No, I'm not.
Okay, then. But if you were, I would object to those because I think we were trying be very...
I just wanted to know what that statute is.
It's possible to advise the community about what the consequences were. What the benefits and what our proposed settlement agreement would accomplish.
I was just trying to find out what that statute is, because when people look it up and they see that it's $5,000 a day in fines and ceasing of the discharge, and then people say you won't lose your house, it's very hard for them to see how they couldn't lose their house in that situation or that circumstance, and I think outreach might be a good idea. You've testified that there hasn't been outreach or information on that. I wanted to just ask a couple of questions about responsibility, because there's been some discussion about taking responsibility. Would you consider voluntary compliance with the CDO requirement by pumping the tanks and meeting all the requirements of the CDO prior to and entering into settlement negotiations, even though they weren't completed or consummated? Would you consider that taking responsibility? Pumping the septic tank, inspecting the system, paying an assessment, offering a proxy vote on their 218 vote, and willing to sign an affidavit that they will hook to a treatment plant. Would that be considered that voluntary effort taking responsibility?
You know, first of all, I thought that you just told us that Ms. McCombs was not part of any settlement group in negotiating with the prosecution team.
She came to me when she wanted to have somebody help her with this and didn't understand the modified CDO, what the consequences were, the settlement, and she didn't really have time to research enough to know what she was getting into when she signed it, as I believe many, many others were also in that situation. And so what I'm just asking the question, with the efforts that she has taken, and I named them off, I rattled them off, would you consider her a responsible, compliant, cooperative discharger?
Let me just say that I would consider a compliant discharger someone who enters into a settlement agreement with the prosecution team.
Even if they haven't had time to negotiate it, to understand it, to have it explained to them, but they're here today because their continuance is denied?
I think that I'm not exactly sure what all of the circumstances are, but I believe that we gave everybody the opportunity to settle with us who wanted to. I don't know that we were ever contacted by... I certainly was not contacted by Ms. McCombs, and I can't speak for anybody else on the prosecution team.
Okay.
And they're suggesting that they weren't...
Chair?
Yeah.
A lot seems to be being made about when the settlement agreement was offered or even developed. And from my understanding, and the settlement agreement can happen on the steps of the... you know, right outside the door. So I don't believe there's any requirement of any time that a settlement agreement can be offered, or should be offered, has to be offered, or agreed to. So
sure.
I mean, that's between the two parties. There's no, I don't know what the legal,
well,
what the point she's trying to make is.
Well, I understand. Parties settle after the jury has been seated and they don't like the jury.
Of course, this isn't a criminal action.
I don't disagree.
I don't disagree. Yeah. We don't disagree with that. I'm just trying to get out there that while some people who signed the settlement are called a cooperative discharger and the others are not, that there is a very gray area there between whether they had an opportunity to understand enough to sign on, but in every other way have demonstrated that they're fully cooperative. That was my only point.
Well, maybe the prosecution can refrain from characterizing the people who signed the agreement and the people who didn't in any particular way. If that's your complaint, you spent a lot of time on a very small, unimportant point.
Oh, well, okay. But it does say so in the settlement agreement that they are given favorable treatment because they are cooperative
that's
dischargers.
Part of the settlement agreement. That's fine.
Okay.
Anything can be in there.
Okay.
Ms. McPherson, I'll give you until 10 up to complete your cross-examination.
I'm finished with my cross-examination. Okay. I wanted to touch on that. In order to do so in a timely manner, the prosecution should be advised of your decision to accept the settlement as soon as possible. And it was just
Is that a question?
No, I'm finished with the cross-examination. I'm sorry that because it's late in the day and that we're all tired, that I'm not afforded the same amount of patience as the earlier people.
I'm not tired, but there are other people that have been here all day long and tomorrow, and I want to make sure that we take care of what their individual cases. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Rockte has said to take your time. He's next up. And last.
And you're getting your time.
I'm sorry.
While I'm talking, I'd appreciate it if you'd
refrain.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's very important to note that your discussions with Ms. McPherson have not been based on your lack of patience or the board's lack of patience, but on the fact that her questioning has been
outside the scope of the testimony and relevance,
and it's not a matter of the board being tired or impatient. It's a matter of the board wanting to keep these proceedings on track with relevant testimony and questions in cross-examination that are on point.
Okay, let's move into presentation of property-specific evidence by the individual property owner. All right, Ms. McPherson, you have 15 minutes.
Okay. I'm putting a face to the property owner. Her home was built in the 50s, pre-8313, and her home was purchased in 1987, pre-moratorium. The CDOs, and I'm going to be reading from here, and it doesn't quite coordinate, so bear with me. The CDO for individuals is not the right enforcement tool. Cease and desist orders against individual residents are never really recommended according to the State Water Resources Control Board policy because citizens do not hold discharge permits and have no control over the collective sewage treatment in the district. Further, individual citizens in the Water Board randomly selected residents, and they're ill-equipped to really provide the site-specific evidence for their defense, as well as the prosecution, who has none. The individual, the average citizen is called to respond to an incredible process that's manifestly unfair when applied to the average citizen. Ms. McComb objects to the consolidated hearings because those who follow her may make a better case to be able to afford attorneys and have a better outcome that will deprive her of the same benefit. Documents in the record and statement challenging the validity of the basin plan and other actions and failures by the Water Board and government entities should be reviewed as it is the very basis for the enforcement action against Ms. McCombs and others. Ms. McCombs objects to being precluded from raising questions and having Mr. Briggs present to answer questions concerning the basis, motivation, interests, goals, and purpose of the enforcement actions against her. It is Ms. McCombs' testimony to the board that the prosecution has prevented nothing to indicate her property is illegally discharging from the individual septic system, that she is polluting or threatening to pollute the groundwater from her specific property. Ms. McComb states that she was never at any time notified that her property or treatment system located at 1327 16th Street was illegal upon the purchase of her property, and she didn't hear anything about illegal system until she was served the enforcement order. Ms. McComb's home was built prior to the prohibition moratorium. Her home is legally permitted with a septic system that is operating properly. She recently pumped her system, and she submitted the receipt as proof of compliance with terms of the CDO, and I have that. She's never had possession of any materials or literature to tell her system was illegal. She's compliant with the terms of the CDO. She's paying a sewer assessment, and she is currently paying for a sewer project. She's been cooperative and compliant, as it is not different than those who relinquished their right to a hearing by accepting a settlement enforcement order, and that she has met all the terms of the enforcement action prior to the hearings and as soon as she was informed of this requirement. She objects to the prosecution staff handling the settlement in that she was not afforded access to negotiation or input into the process and demonstrated all the same cooperative efforts except relinquishing her right to a hearing. And she hasn't been given consideration as those who have waived the hearing process. She has no more ability to, on her own, to comply with the basin plan or water board requirements to build a project. She has come into compliance and provided in the water code. She has no assistance to come into compliance, as is provided in the water code, and no remedial action in the form of a letter to comply or any kind of progressive enforcement that has happened to assist her in that way. The burden of proof is the water boards, and they're required to notify, assist, and apply. Progressive enforcement is at the heart of the enforcement guidelines. And she intends to incorporate the testimony of the CSD and others, preserve her constitutional rights with a presumption of innocence. There is no evidence that her property is polluting, no progressive enforcement attempted, lack of due process protections. She's claiming that the remedy will not improve water quality. She's willing to accept a work plan that is already cooperative and compliant with all requirements, and she's already paying her assessment. Targeting individuals is the wrong tool. And then, of course, with AB 2701, the conditions have changed since enforcement was initiated, and maybe it's not necessary. Ms. McCombs and others believe that it's contrary to your policy, and it contradicts past staff, as we noted in the earlier presentation, their own recommendations. And she also believes under the Porter Cologne Act that it's not in the best interest of the people of the state. Because CDOs regularly involve extensive capital improvements beyond the scope of a single property, after looking at the policy as a whole, it's clear that the Water Board does not consider CDOs to be an appropriate prosecution tool against private citizens because citizens hold no discharge permits and have no control over sewage or stormwater collection and treatment. They don't build treatment plants. A group prosecution necessarily implies a scientific, technical, and environmental evidence that the Water Board would possess would not only justify the prosecution, but the evidence applies equally to all properties, and of course that cannot possibly be the case. The Water Board should be required to prosecute individuals based on individual site-specific evidence because the cost has the potential to be very high. The Water Board never looked at whether any of these properties are individually polluting. For evidence of pollution on septic tanks, the guidance suggests that you must include site-specific and property-specific details, groundwater quality, depth of groundwater and direction of flow, soil types and hydrogeologic characteristics of the subsurface, proximity to surface waters, flood potential, nitrogen loading from your septic tanks, and individual and cumulative impacts of this discharge to the groundwater basin. The boundaries are interesting. The boundaries for the zone were very arbitrary when they were first established and without much science. This was a question in a letter to Roger Briggs in 2002. It said, what difference in water quality information, hydrology, ability to subdivide, zoning, and land use potential gave the Water Board reason to draw the prohibition boundary in 1983? The answer is, it was staff's best professional judgment based upon all the information and data at that time on where the prohibition boundaries should be drawn. It says probation. It should say prohibition, sorry. Should be drawn. And the prohibition boundary was established to prevent any new discharges within the zone. And that was written in 2002 by Roger Briggs. He goes on to say, and conclude with, the discharge prohibition zone was also established to encourage the County of San Luis Obispo and now the LOCSD to develop a solution to ongoing water quality impacts from the existing discharges. The enforcement against individuals is just not appropriate. In closing, these proposed CDOs are not unlike going to a high school, and that high school isn't doing very well on the tests, and so you randomly select 45 students and you tell them that if the entire school's test scores do not improve, then you're going to expel them. Not only would the 45 students not have any control over the entire student body, but this method is widely recognized as unjust and coercive. And we ask that you rethink this, come up with another strategy that does not involve the consequences that are way beyond the control of the discharger. And with that, I would conclude my remarks.
Okay. Cross-examination of Ms. McPherson by prosecution team.
We have one question.
Just a couple quick questions. Ms. McPherson, what efforts did Ms. McCombs take to try to secure Mr. Briggs' testimony?
She received documentation in mid-September concerning the new case that was filed, and she did not have any idea on how to subpoena Mr. Briggs. But when she did ask a friend, she had heard that subpoenas had been denied by the board in April, and so she assumed that that would not be a possibility.
So she made no affirmative effort to try to secure his deposition testimony, is that correct?
What happened was when she had observed...
Is that correct, yes or no?
Can you ask it again? I'm sorry.
Did she make an affirmative effort to try to secure Mr. Briggs' deposition testimony?
Only through inquiries to other people in the community. She may have received misinformation, perhaps, but from the April meeting, all of the subpoenas had been quashed then, and they have been since. We have no subpoenas that have been accepted. And so I think she had the impression that no matter what she might do with her limited knowledge of the process, it would not be successful.
Okay, so the answer is no. Also, in terms of what kind of efforts did Ms. McCombs ever make any efforts to contact any member of the prosecution team to talk about an alternative resolution of her proposed CDO?
Yeah, I think she did, yes.
And who did she contact?
I would believe it probably was Matt Thompson, but I couldn't testify that. I know that she talked to Sorrel Marks, maybe. I don't know. I know that she talked to somebody about that.
When you say you know she talked to somebody, I mean, it sounds like you don't know whether she talked to somebody.
No, I do know that she talked to somebody at the Water Board. I'm sorry.
April 28th, she and I came over and met with Sorrel.
Oh. I'm referring to Tim Roctes because he did assist her, and they both... April 28th, and in a meeting on August 24th, I initiated, along with fellow proposed CDO recipient Ms. Lori McCombs, with prosecution staff member Sorrel Marks and Allison. She had a different last name than Milholland, and urge you and Mr. Briggs to consider measures other than CDOs on properties in order to achieve the mutual goal of clean water. And then she renewed that in a document. And she said, among other things, about the septic tank pumping and being a cooperative discharger, and that they wanted to find another way. But then she never was contacted about a settlement offer or able to negotiate that.
I don't have any other questions.
Okay. Any rebuttal testimony by the prosecution team?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yeah, just to clarify, Lori McComb lives at 1327 16th Street.
Mm.
This is where she lives. The prohibition zone boundary is the closest boundary is runs along South Bay Boulevard there. Sorry, this basically that bold yellow line. I think this, and then it runs around here. So I think it demonstrates that she lives within the prohibition zone boundary. That's all.
No further rebuttal testimony? Okay. Ms. McPherson, any rebuttal testimony?
Well, just that the nearest well is that 0.8 milligrams per liter. So if you're relying on well data instead of site specific, I would just want to point out that between that and the density issues of the Elfin Forest, which is an area that was cited for or slated for high density condos that never happened and never will, does break down that whole density issue, and that there isn't pollution in that area. So I would think that would help to at least paint a picture of what this individual discharger has going on in their her neighborhood, or at least close to her property.
Okay. Closing arguments? Ms. McPherson.
Well, I would say that Ms. McCombs is not polluting. She does not admit to any such charge. She wants to be considered innocent and have evidence to that effect put forth, rather than just assume that she's living in a certain town that she's automatically individually responsible to build a treatment plant. And we would just ask that if a CDO, is,
maybe that's Ms. McHume's watching you on television and maybe
could be
disagreeing with
maybe she needs to talk to you here. I lost my train of thought, sorry. The question is that if you're going to rule and give her a CDO, she needs to know what the worst case scenario is to her, because she can't control what the county does. And also that because you're going to issue these to 4,700 others, that she would ask that you would, if you do issue it, that you hold it in abeyance and not launch any of them until you can launch them all at the same time, so there's no advantage or disadvantage. She realizes that if she were to sell her property and the property next door was up for sale, that there would be a real problem with her getting the same price as the property next door without a CDO. There have been, she is aware of the banks that have said that there is a problem getting equity loans with the same value as a house without a CDO. So I think that if you can take that into consideration and maybe launch these all at the same time, that would be equitable.
Okay. Mr. Sato, closing arguments.
The evidence and testimony that you've heard today makes it clear that Ms. McCombs does live within the prohibition zone. She is discharging in violation of the basin plan, and we recommend you adopt the amended cease and desist order.
And just one other comment is that in listening to Ms. McPherson's closing statement, I mean, there's really no effort on the part of the prosecution team to make any individual build a sewage treatment facility. What we are trying to do is get people to comply with the prohibition zone. How they comply with the prohibition zone is up to them.
Okay. All right. The matter is submitted.
They're asking people to.
Board comments?
No.
Chair?
Yes. Dr. Press.
This is speaking to the issue of individual CDOs, and I've said this before, and I'll just say it again, that I feel like the board is actually has fewer options than the designated parties seem to think. After 23 years, it's entirely possible and reasonable for a board to wonder how quickly progress would be made. I think that's a fairly mild statement. And so, as a board member, my confidence about a sewage treatment plant happening along the same timelines, or sort of quickly and with a kind of
determination,
yeah, is not high, and so that's why I feel like I have few options here to hold the dischargers accountable to the public benefit that I'm sworn to protect. How do I, so to put it in starker, less genteel terms, if the individuals are not held responsible, and if it's entirely possible that the county or the CSD or some as yet unknown entity doesn't succeed, how do I go back to the public, to the citizens of California, and say who's accountable, who ought to hold responsible for this? That's my fundamental bedrock problem, and I don't especially like, you know, just to put it on the record, I don't like voting for individual CDOs. This is not something that I, as a matter of philosophy, this is where I'd like to go. I echo Mr. Shallcross's sentiment that this is not the greatest form of water policy. It really isn't. But I just see so few and such lousy options that this is what we've been left with.
Any other board comments? Okay. There was a question posed by Ms. McPherson about Ms. McCune would like to know what is the maximum potential downside for this CDO. I think you just need to read the CDO, and it's quite apparent. Any potential penalty, dollar penalty, has to be determined by the board. So there's no way to tell at this point. You can read the statutes and see what they require and following what the CDO says, but eventually, if it should come to that, there would be another hearing, and this board would sit here having that discussion. What's the appropriate dollar amount? I don't know. And they're not going to be able to tell you. No one is. I mean, you can read through the CDO and the mandates of it, and you can come up with all kinds of scenarios. And we have done that in our deliberations. And we're just going to have to see what happens with this. Hopefully the community will finally come together and get something that, you know, a majority of them can agree upon. Anyway, do I have a motion?
Yeah. Based on the evidence that we've heard, I move the adoption of the CDO.
Okay. Second.
And I guess before we vote...
Is that as amended?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's amended.
Yeah,
as the others
I think
amended.
We indicated earlier that they all would be as amended if we... issued any further ones.
And I do have...
That was the recommendation of the prosecution team.
Right. And I, you know, want to acknowledge the concern that people are all treated the same. You know, I don't know what the prosecution team has in store for the remaining people, but I hope that whatever road you take, that we can try to get everybody, you know, in the same status as soon as possible, you know, however we're going to do that. So you don't have to give me an answer to that. I'm not asking for one. It's just a statement. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you. Mr. Payne.
Tomorrow.